And also you mentioned chichakti. Are they two different words?
Same. They are essentially the same. Only if you want to become a great metaphysician or philosopher, then you try to find some sort of a distinction . If you cannot find distinctions and differences, you are not a philosopher. That is, you do not have that keen, piercing intelligence, penetrating, piercing intelligence. And if you have this penetrating and piercing intelligence, then you can really distinguish between fire and its heat. This is heat, this is fire. This is light, this is heat, that sort of thing. And you can really distinguish between the rose and its fragrance. I am afraid I can't. I suppose I am too gross, too dumb, too dull. Without the rose, there is no fragrance, there is no aroma. Without the fire, there is no heat. Without the source of that heat, there is no heat. Why do you distinguish one from the other? So, even so, I also mentioned this morning that prana is intelligent energy, energy which is always intelligent. If you pick up a book on Vedanta, you would find that that statement was completely off the mark, because there we are told that prana is inert. The argument goes like this. It's a very interesting argument. Take a living being that is also conscious, I mean, you. Right? And in you, this life force functions, the vitality functions. Because you are intelligent. And therefore, this vitality functions in an intelligent way. Here, the intelligence or consciousness or awareness is considered the attribute of Atma, self, soul. So, you are the living soul. You are the living soul. Living being, the function of prana, and soul being consciousness. But you see that the livingness or the vitality or the prana or the life force functions intelligently. They say that is because of the intelligence, the soul. So, from this composition of livingness plus soul, consciousness and energy, where the energy is intelligent, that intelligence belongs to consciousness, not to energy. If you do not understand it, you need another cup of coffee. So, when that intelligence is taken away, what remains, which is vitality, energy or life force, that is inert. But then who the hell has seen an inert prana, which doesn't have an intelligence? This is sort of nauseating speculation. This sort of argument logic is sometimes used in by Vasishtha and Yoga Vasishtha, but very beautifully. Very beautifully. You also find the word inert there, where he says the entire universe is the effervescence or the blossoming of consciousness. And if you still say that I see this carpet and I see all these eyes, they're all nothing but consciousness. And if you see now, this is very lawyerly, not scholarly, but lawyerly. If you see in this something other than consciousness, that is inert. That is no consciousness. Why? Your own statement is taken for that argument. If you see in this world something other than consciousness, that is inert. But Vasishtha says, I don't see anything other than this consciousness. Infinite consciousness alone exists. There is nothing else. But if you turn around and say, but no, I don't agree. This is no consciousness. The carpet has no consciousness. This, that's enough. That's it. That's it. That is, it's a lawyerly quib. What is mind? Now, the proposition, the initial proposition is that there is nothing but the one infinite consciousness which is God. There is nothing but the one infinite consciousness which is God. But you know, you say, there is a mind and which behaves in a stupid way sometimes, which sometimes seems to be intelligent and sometimes so dull. This is not like the infinite consciousness you describe. Then he says, that is inert. You said so. You said that this mind is not like the infinite consciousness that you describe. So you are seeing something other than the infinite consciousness and you are calling that the mind. That is inert. Which means it is non-existent. That's an attack, which is sometimes interesting in certain contexts. But otherwise, the philosopher's habit of splitting all these things, prana means this, and chit shakti means something else. It's all the same. And as you know, as those of you who have studied some Hatha Yoga know, that this prana itself is supposed to have five different aspects. Somewhere they call them aspects, somewhere they make the whole thing sound as if that there are five different things, prana, apana, udana, vyana, samana. Prana, apana, udana, vyana, samana. Five different pranas. Life force is life force. Why do we think of several life forces? This same life force functions in very many different ways, in very many different situations. And if you want to distinguish them, you use some kind of an expression. That's all. Chit Shakti. We might, in our own state of ignorance, say that electricity is unconscious. That is like saying that animals are idiots, fools. Animals are ignorant. That's only because we are unable to commune or communicate with them and discover how intelligent they are. If we had that ability, quite likely we will find that electricity is also highly intelligent. All force, all power, all energy is highly intelligent. But not as energy, but as the emanation of consciousness which fills the entire universe. The whole universe is throbbing with consciousness. There's nothing unintelligent in the whole universe. And the functioning of this intelligence that fills the entire universe is called prana. It's also called Chit Shakti, it's also called Kundalini Shakti, it's also called everything. Any other name you want to give? You're welcome. Life Force. We might, for instance, consider that it is because we are intelligent beings, and therefore our vitality or prana or life force is also intelligent, and therefore the pies and the vegetables and the soup and all the rest of it, whatever is thrown into the mouth, gets digested. That's the normal view, isn't it? That we are all so intelligent that the organs, which are also endowed with this intelligence and with this energy, are able somehow to convert this mess into meaningful energy or flesh or bones, blood. But I wonder if you have considered this, the stuff that you eat must also be intelligent enough to cooperate with this. Yeah? The stuff that you eat, the vegetables and the bread and the potatoes and all that, the soup and the cake, must also be endowed with a certain intelligence which immediately responds to this process of assimilation. In a boy meets girl situation, the boy looks at the girl and the girl responds. Otherwise, there's a problem. Yeah? That's it. So, that responsive intelligence must be there in the food that is being eaten. And therefore, it is stupid to consider anything unintelligent in this world. Everything has got. Everything is part of this infinite intelligence, and that infinite intelligence has inherent energy. That energy cannot be really separated from that intelligence. So that cosmic consciousness is at the same time cosmic energy. Inseparably so. In the Yoga Vasishtha, again, after distinguishing one from the other with toothpick clarity, Vasishtha usually comes around and says, all this is meant merely for teaching. It is not as though that the soul and the mind and all these or real and sustained entities. Only if that is understood, we will understand also what is meant by pranayama, in the sense of extending this prana and utilizing this prana, exercising this prana. It not only involves the practice of the yoga asanas and a little breathing exercises and so on, but the approach is integral again. One becomes sensitive enough to see that this food is necessary for the sustenance of the body, and I must have the ability to digest this. I must want the food and the food must want me. Both of us must be attracted to each other. If there is no response from one side, it is not assimilated. The food must be good for me. I must relish it. I must enjoy it while I partake of that food. If not, then there is a problem. There is no bad food. There is no bad food. All food is good. But there must be this responsiveness, mutual responsiveness. You must like the food and the food must like you. Then it is great fun. Meat is good, very good food for the cat or the tiger or the lion and so on. May not be for you. Grass is excellent food for the cow. You may find it a bit more difficult to even chew it. So one must find, discover the responsiveness, what that particular system responds well to. And therefore all these absolutes in connection with food fads are not really yogic. The yogi's attitude. If you pick up the Bhagavad Gita in the 17th chapter, you have the beautiful description of what food is sattvic, what food is rajasic, and what food is tamasic. It's unfortunately we have fallen into a funny trap of considering what is sattvic as the best and what is rajasic as the middling and what is tamasic as the worst. That is, that suggestion is not there. Bhojanam tamasa priyam, bhojanam rajasa priyam. These are foodstuff that the rajasic man likes. These are food for the tamasic man. Perfectly all right. You may want to experiment, that's your problem. But Krishna doesn't suggest all that. He merely says, the tamasic man will like this, the rajasic man will like that. Rajasic, he doesn't even say rajasic man, rajasic body. Which means, supposing you are a worker who works outdoor on the farm, the field, for 10 hours of the day. If you eat what is described as sattvic food, you will perish in 15 days. It's no good for you. So that one must learn again from the prana itself how to organize all this. What sort of food is necessary for what sort of body, what sort of constitution, for what sort of work. The whole thing, integration there again. Your work, your rest, your age, your constitution, your habits and the climatic conditions, All these things determine what food is good for you. If you merely have some sort of a this and nothing else, then it doesn't work. A panacea for all situations, that's a bullet. All illness is cured instantly. There's no problem at all. There is no other foodstuff. The iron tonic, isn't it? A bullet. Otherwise, tremendous intelligence is needed in all this. There is an integral approach, not isolated approach. Someone came here, I don't want to mention names, and Lakshmi and I had gone to greet him, and he had himself volunteered to bless us with his company for lunch. When he was asked, what would you like for lunch? He said, two pieces of white bread, not brown. That's the first shock. Some cottage cheese and a little yogurt plus white sugar, not brown. And one cup of milk, and I'll myself prepare it with adding to it 4 cups of warm water. Totally anti-healthy, not only unhealthy. Then he said, this is what suits me, this is what is good for me. Brown bread I cannot digest. That's it. That is called intelligence. The rest is bigotry, fanaticism, which means brainlessness. Which means total brainlessness. And in the same way, I met another Swami, great yogi in Germany, an Indian, Swami Hariharananda. He said, I never take uncooked apples, however ripe they may be, I still want them boiled, stewed. I never eat uncooked apples. It's dangerous for health. Okay, there you have it. So, this prana functions in all beings, and depending upon the substance through which it functions, there is some apparent change. That in itself is proof that it is an intelligent energy. Anything that is unintelligent functions uniformly. Here it does, it's not so. And similarly, if you look at electricity, you begin to wonder that the same energy is capable of lighting a lamp, turning a fan, freezing a refrigerator, and hotting up the stove. Which means there is some intelligence in it. Maybe there is some more intelligence in the scientist or the technician. But in that also there is some intelligence. And that is prana, that is chit-shakti. And therefore we are surrounded by chit-shakti in every little thing. In the same way we are told that the body is inert. When such a statement is made, it only means that if you can conceive of the body as being different and distinct from the living soul, then it becomes inert. But if you realize that there is no dead body, that it is not, it can never be different from the soul, then there is no difference. Then it is not, there is no inertness in the body. I don't know how many of you have read this Man the Unknown by Alexis Carrel. There he reveals, I mean, he makes a statement which is very beautiful. Did he get the Nobel Prize for learning how to sew the arteries and so on? Didn't it? Something like that. Something connected with, he got a Nobel Prize for something, some discovery connected with the clotting system. And he says, it was there before I discovered it. That when an artery is cut and it starts bleeding, it immediately seals itself. There is such tremendous intelligence there. There is energy, and at the same time there is tremendous intelligence. And it is this intelligence that keeps on repairing the organ or the organism that it indwells, making it go a little further. And if this organism behaves in a certain way that it's too much work, then it bombs the whole house and builds a new one. Demolishes the whole house and builds a new one. That also is intelligent. That too involves a tremendous intelligence. So one who understands the nature of prana as chit-shakti gets to know its functioning to the extent that it is possible. It is not possible for the human mind to understand prana completely and totally. It is as difficult as it is to realize God with the finite mind. It is not possible. But one can surrender oneself to it, one can tune ourselves to it, and one can live in accordance with the demands of prana, which is possible. It's not always so easy in our funny world. You can't switch on clean air. You can't switch on pure, unadulterated food. Lots of difficulties now. And our lifestyle is not all that geared to healthy living. This is so even in ashrams, you cannot say I will eat only when I am hungry. Supposing all of you started saying this, you know, the kitchen would never be free and the tables would never be clean. You feel hungry now and she feels hungry half an hour later. He feels hungry 1 hour later. So, unfortunately, because of our the social organization, we have breakfast time, lunch time, dinner time, and whether or not we are hungry, we have to eat. This sort of thing prevails even in big ashrams and so on. And all these are unnatural. And however much we struggle in this world, we are caught up in a fairly unnatural system, which it is very difficult to break away from. But to the extent that we have some choice, we can make intelligent choices if we know how to tune in to this prana. If we realize that all that happens because of prana, health, illness, etc., 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 everything. Then we would know how to eat, what to eat and what to avoid, what to drink and what not to drink, what sort of dress to wear, when and how, everything. And how much to work, when to rest the body, how to avoid being lethargic. All these problems can be solved if one understands and draws closer to this prana, which is chit shakti. And while drawing closer and closer, through the practice of yoga, through the practice of asanas and pranayama, we approach this prana with a certain amount of what our friend Yogi Deshikachar might call religiousness in yoga, a certain amount of reverence. The body is not to be treated as if it is a piece of dirt, nor to be feated as if it was some kind of a pleasure center. But it is there. We don't know how it arose. It is there. And the energy in it, the consciousness in it, the intelligence in it, they're all beyond the mind. None of these things can be really and truly understood. And so, one who knows this approaches the body and its function with tremendous affection and devotion. If we do that, then I'm quite sure that the solutions will come from the body itself. What is needed, what is not needed, and how to integrate our whole life in such a way that this chit shakti is able to function without confusion. That is the yogi's approach. If anything is separate from God, then that is inert. That's it. If anything is separate from God, that is inert. God being intelligence, cosmic intelligence, anything that is other than God is inert. So, if chit shakti is separate from God, what happens? Or, if chit shakti is considered separate from God, and the master says, then that is inert, what does it mean? It means that it is, you are using a word which does not have a corresponding independent entity. It is just a word. Chit shakti, as divorced from God, is just a word. It has no existence in itself, by itself. Prana is merely a word. If it is to be divorced from God, energy is merely a word. If it is to be divorced from its source.
I think I'm still hung up on thinking that God is a thing.
God is a thing, and he sort of spits out what is called energy. These two cannot be separated. It is the mind that seeks to find a distinction between these, and it is the mind which therefore creates a thought. It's only a thought. There's nothing more than the thought. And that thought is inert. Chit shakti is not inert, but the thought of chit shakti is inert. Chit shakti is not inert, but the word chit shakti is inert. Sure. S-U-G-A-R is not sweet. Sugar is sweet. But the word is not sweet. You can write it on a piece of paper and you cannot sweeten your coffee with it. In that sense, prana is inert. That is, if the mind can conceive of chit shakti as being separate, it is inert. If you can conceive of yourself as being separate from the cosmic being, you are inert and non-existent. But how can anything be outside of the cosmic being? Except in thought. And it is that thought that is inert. And that is disposed of. The cosmic being is realized as it is, without difficulty.